Well, it is the big foreign news of the morning. The second part of the Harry and Meghan tale went to air on Netflix last night. I watched most of it. I've seen my good mate Hugh Whitfield on Seven on Sunrise this morning. That seems to be what everyone wants to talk about. Hugh, welcome. Lovely to catch up again. What'd you make of it, mate?
Morning, Steve. Well, I think it was definitely more explosive than the first three episodes. If there was any chance that Harry and Meghan may return to royal life, may spend any extensive time in the UK in the future, I think that is well and truly over. It does appear that Harry has taken a torch to the bridge between himself and his brother, that relationship, and he has burnt it down. The bridge is gone. The relationship is clearly over. For him to so publicly trash essentially his brother's character and accuse his father of being a liar is so incendiary. It's the stuff of the sort of headlines that Harry and Meghan have so valiantly crusaded against over the last couple of years.
Let's have a listen to that allegation he makes about his brother shouting at him. And Charles also being in the room, but more poignantly, the Queen sitting there quietly. Have a quick listen to this.
It was terrifying to have my brother scream and shout at me and my father say things that just simply weren't true, and my grandmother, you know, quietly sit there and sort of take it all in.
Taking us inside that room where the Queen witnessed this was quite an extraordinary thing to say.
Yeah, and I think there are certainly people here who see the fact that he has mentioned the Queen and spoken about that about her in that way as particularly inflammatory and incredibly disrespectful as well. A woman who, yes, served 70 years transforming the empire into the Commonwealth as we know it is today, and to just say that she sat back to preserve the institution. I mean, come on, mate. Like, why are you doing this? Now, if we asked that question and they did answer somehow, they would probably say that they want their truth put across. They want to tell their side of the story. But that's the thing here, Steve. This is a very one-sided story, a very one-sided 6 hours. The other people who appear are all supporting Harry and Meghan's perception of events and perception of the world. And you hear him talk about there being terrified of his brother. Well, speaking to people here, and I'm obviously not going to name names, well-connected people are saying that if you are terrified of that, mate, then, you know, that's quite a poor position to take. You're terrified of your brother screaming and shouting at you. Adam, did you get back up and scream and shout at him? We don't know because he didn't say.
Every family has its moments. I mean, you can almost put that to one side. Brothers fight all the time. Brothers don't, you know, get on forever. You split. There's families where brothers and sisters don't speak for years. So, yeah, we have to look at that in that context. But what about these allegations of racism from Meghan? Let's have a listen to what she said about death threats.
You are making people want to kill me. It's not just a tabloid. It's not just some story. You are making me scared.
How's the British public reacting to the racism comments?
Yeah, look, I think there's quite a few layers to this. I think much of the racism allegations were levelled in the first three episodes. The particular things here are the nature of the online trolling and the racism embedded within that was directed towards Meghan, particularly following the so-called Megxit, and the nature of the headlines within the media. Now, where Meghan gets emotional there, she's talking about the trolls who were writing that they wanted to kill her and that she didn't feel safe in their home. She just had Archie. She was concerned about the safety of her children. They are genuine concerns, and I'm not sure that anyone would be able to dispute those because they are clearly very dearly held, and we know that those death threats were being written on places like Twitter. There are additional allegations made that because of the press coverage and the press impact, that Harry says that that Meghan suffered a miscarriage in between the birth of Archie and Lilibet, and that was caused by the ongoing case that they had against the Mail on Sunday and the actions that the Mail on Sunday was taking to defend the case, the stress and the impact of that court case caused her to lose a child. That is awful. That is truly awful. for Harry to say that it was the Mail on Sunday that did that, that is also highly inflammatory and incendiary and potentially defamatory as well.
What are the British public making of this, Hugh? You've lived there for a long time now. I mean, we sit here in Australia, we sit down last night and we watch this, and there's great interest in our country about this. But Britain, England, where you live, is the seat of King Charles III and the royal family. What's the average Brit make of this? Do they just look at it and go, oh, well, that's two brothers fighting, or what are they saying?
Well, look, a couple of things, Steve. It's the top story, without a doubt. There's nurses' strikes here, the posties are on strike, the trains are on strike. Harry and Meghan's the top story, whether you like it or not, because everyone knows the characters, everyone's talking about it. I've just been down at Westminster Abbey. Anyone who turns up to a royal event, you know, is a bit of a fan, right? You want to see them because it's something special, especially if you're a tourist. There were people there yelling out, and one woman said to me, is it okay to protest? And I was like, I don't want to be a part of this. You do whatever you think you need to do. And I thought she's probably going to be protesting, surely, in support of Harry. But no, she was yelling out, we love you, Kate. We love you, William. So protesting in support of the royal family, almost a rally in support of them. Look, I think there's definitely people here who don't care. There's definitely people who view this as rich people infighting. But the service of the Queen has been dearly held and dearly respected by this country. And I think Charles, for the most part, has got off to a flying start in his reign. He's being bogged down by these family issues that in the past have been kept behind closed doors, and I've got to say, for most families, generally are.
If the Queen was still alive, do you think they would have released this, or would they kept it?
Well, I think the most disrespectful comments towards the Queen were actually last week when Meghan appeared to mock curtsy the Queen when she did it for the first time. You add that into what Harry has said today about how she just sat back at Sandringham, and I actually think it's so disrespectful that they probably would have left it in. I actually think that they're so blind to how they're being perceived outside of the United States that they don't care anymore. And it's clear because they've gone so hard, particularly with these personal relationships. Why wouldn't they? They clearly just do not like the institution. They do not like how they believe they were treated, and they don't want to be a part of it.
I just wonder, though, you're sitting in Liverpool or Birmingham or Sheffield or somewhere, Worcester, you're watching this and you've got them complaining that the cottage they're in is not big enough, the roof's ceiling's too low. Oprah goes, oh, not a very big house you're in. I mean, that wouldn't go down all that well if you're struggling to pay your power bill.
Steve, it has not been above 0 degrees in London this week. There are people who are literally freezing within their homes. And you're right, if they're watching this, albeit having to pay for Netflix, so there's a barrier there anyway in order to listen to their truth, if they're watching this, they will be furious that this young man who was brought up in a literal palace is complaining about his brother screaming and shouting at him. I mean, where on earth has he been for the last 35, 40 years? It's unbelievable, really.
What happens next, Hugh?
The palace will keep calm and carry on. They are offering no comment whatsoever. I really do think that they hope this will blow over. But there is another storm on the horizon in the form of Harry's book, Spare, which is due for release on January 10. There is talk that he's in talks with big shot interviewers, particularly in the United States. Words being bandied around include Gail King from CBS, best friend of Oprah, that he might do a sit down with her in the run up to the release of that book. I mean, the journalist in me says these stories, these allegations need to be tested under the questioning of someone like a journalist who can say, well, mate, I'm not sure that this actually stacks up. Did that really happen? Gail King will probably not ask too hard of questions, although she did a really good job with R. Kelly a couple of years ago. The book is probably going to detail more allegations within, you know, the family and behind closed doors. It's not going to be pretty. And the problem with a book is that it just doesn't disappear like a TV show kind of does these days. book hangs around in libraries and in people's bookcases, and it doesn't go away. And I think that could be a big problem.
Great stuff, Hugh, as usual. You know how much we treasure talking to you. It's our last show for the year. So everywhere from when you were in Kyiv, across the Ukraine, all of the big stories around Europe for the last couple of years, you've been very generous with your time. We really enjoy watching you on 7 on Sunrise on the news and talking to you on the radio. So thank you very much, my friend.
Thanks, Steve. It's been a really big year over here, so thanks for having me on.
Hugh Whitfeld from 7.
Thanks for listening to this Australia Today podcast. For more of the news that affects you, download the Listener app and search Australia Today. Listener.